getting rid of the Iranian regime in the broad scheme of things can't be seen to be immoral. They're trying to get rid of a regime that murders its own people, that has genocidal intent.
There is a new geopolitical vision emerging. If you want to call this ideology, call it ideology. If you don't, you don't.
I think you could point to almost everything that Trump is doing and find a historical equivalence, not, you know, 200 years ago or 100 years ago, but under Obama, under David Cameron, under French leaders, Sarkozy, and on and on.
So Trump's just more honest, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Let me pick up on the point you were saying there with Glenn, which is the suggestion that people perhaps are moving away from the forums, we're moving away from the ideas that there should be rules, ideology, whatever you want to call it, ways of dealing in a non-Hobbesian way. Glenn, do you think there's a reason why that fig leaf no longer seems to be necessary, if that is indeed a fig leaf?
Yeah, I guess the question that we are all talking about in different ways, and maybe we're not very far apart, actually, in our view of them, is whether a fig leaf is desirable if the fig leaf is just disguising and the primary purpose of it is to obscure or to mask the actual evil that's taking place behind it. In other words, we can have a set of rules to which we aspire, and the fact that we don't perfectly adhere to them, which I think we're all agreeing we most certainly don't, can nonetheless be something, can be an aspiration that's nonetheless valuable. I think maybe where I'm differing a little bit is in my view, and I think it comes from not just what the United States and its allies did throughout the war on terror, but what we just witnessed, and I forgive me for raising such a potentially divisive topic, but what we just witnessed Israel and the United States and much of Europe doing in Gaza. Where were the international rules of rules-based order with that? Where were these international tribunals? Where were these philosophical values to which we all adhere in the United States and in Europe? This was not during Donald Trump's administration. This was almost entirely during Joe Biden's, with the support not of right-wing populist governments in Europe, but centrist and even center-left governments in Europe. And so I certainly don't want a neo-Hobbesian view that I advocate for, where I say, look, let's just forget this whole idea of rules. Obviously, World War II was something the world came together and said, we want to do everything possible to make sure we never replicate the true unlimited horrors of what we just witnessed. And out of that came things like the new Geneva Conventions and international tribunals. I would love for those to have more weight than they do. And I don't think you can lay it all at President Trump's doorstep, because I see him much more as a continuation or a reflection of what came before him rather than a radical departure from it.
Let me pick up on that, because what you're talking about there is a kind of change, maybe, as you say, not necessarily just under Trump, but before. But you referred to what went on during the Second World War and afterwards. And the second question we want to address is whether, if you like, the kind of area that we should have ideology, that we did have ideology, was a kind of blip. Is the dominance of ideology in the last century an outlier in human history that has otherwise been dominated by the control of land and resources? Are we now, in a way, returning to that previous situation, that world of if you like, neo-Hobbesianism, I suppose? Sheila, let me pick up with you on that. Do you think that's right? Do you think we've been through a period where ideology mattered? And it was perhaps always the norm that it wouldn't. Power and resources were always more important.
It's never either or. I guess from the very beginning, I'm trying to say that power and resources and belief systems go together. I mean, the way I think about this is, let me just put this word, the state system, right? Forward, I mean, at the end, when the UN was founded, there were United Nations, there were about 50, 52 to 60 members. Today, we're dealing with a world of 195 states plus non-state peoples, right? And I think Sam at one point said he wished it were like cricket. Cricket has rules. So we are in at a point when obviously one set of rules with hypocrisy and exceptions and everything, yes, given, admitted that one set of rules has ended and we are making a transition to something else. But what is that something else? Is that something else emerging? The way I see what's emerging is, you know, something that's been this concept of spheres of influence. Grossraum. I mean, the originator of the spheres of influence theory was the Nazi theorist Carl Schmitt, who basically theorized that the Nazi regime needed a Grossraum, that it needed space to extend. And the space to extend, it's also used, for example, in an ethnicized fashion by Putin. So what we have now is this superpower spheres of influence, Russia, China, the United States, with poor Europe adrift, not quite knowing and where it goes. And there is a re-ethnicization as well that is going on. So what I see as it's not the end of ideology, it's the emergence of a different form, of a different kind of ideology. I mean, listen to Marco Rubio's speech. It was the most revanchist, triumphalist speech of Christian colonialism. He didn't even say Judeo-Christian, which I never quite like because I don't know what that hyphen means. But, you know, it was unbelievable that he just basically justified conquista of, you know, all the Americas. And this is a different language than Biden. Biden's mistake was not being able to psych out the Benjamin Netanyahu's hypocrisy and cleverness. And Biden was a committed Zionist. He came from a different generation. And I agree with Clinton that the Democrats and Biden made many mistakes. I was with Bernie Sanders. I wanted restrictions on military aid to Israel and severe military aid. So it's not as if everybody in the United States, you know, thought alike. But to summarize, my point is that there is something, there is a new geopolitical vision emerging. If you want to call this ideology, call it ideology. If you don't, you don't. But this new geopolitical vision is spheres of influence plus some kind of civilizational triumphalism.
All right, let me pick that up with Glenn, because it's interesting the point Schiller's making there, that my question is, well, did we go through an ideological period and went out the other side? She said, no, we're moving to a different sort of ideology, the ideology of spheres of influence. Whether or not that's an ideology, I suppose, is an interesting question. What's your take on that, Glenn?
Yeah, you know, I think like what Sam said earlier about the war on terror, which is that it didn't just have a geostrategic component, but an ideological one, and that in a sense, a lot of people saw it as a civilizational war. Obviously, something that well preceded Donald Trump or the abuses of the last several years, I think is notable. And I would also add that one of the examples, I was on I did a couple of events earlier today about topics similar. And one of the examples most frequently invoked to suggest Trump is different in kind or in some radical way was what he did in Venezuela, which was obviously illegal and I think indefensible on every level. But it reminded me very much of what I watched George H.W. Bush do when he invaded Panama and killed a lot more Panamanians than Trump killed Venezuelans, and did essentially the same thing, took out Manuel Noriega, the leader of the country, brought him back to the United States to stand trial. I mean, almost an identical act. And that was by somebody, George H.W. Bush, who was considered the ultimate transatlanticist, the ultimate believer in post-World War II global institutions, the rules-based international order, which he invoked in the war against Saddam Hussein in Kuwait. And I think you could point to almost everything that Trump is doing and find a historical equivalence, not, you know, 200 years ago or 100 years ago, but under Obama, under David Cameron, under, you know, French leaders, Sarkozy, and on and on, in a way that I think suggests a lot more continuity between what we have now than some radical departure. Again, I do think Trump is more kind of nakedly candid about what he's doing. He doesn't care about the fig leaf. He has no interest in the fig leaf. He doesn't want the fig leaf. And there is some, for sure, strain that has been longstanding in the American right and then populist right-wing movements in Europe against any international institutions. That was part of what drove the vote on Brexit. Obviously, a lot of hostility in the American right to the UN going back many decades that maybe is taking a stronger form now that you have Trump in power. But I think there's a lot more continuity than some kind of a hard break that you could point to ideologically as compared to, say, the last several years versus the last century even.
But Trump's just more honest is what you're saying.
Yes. I think the best example was, I remember in 2018 or 2017, he welcomed General Sisi into the White House and the entire media said, oh, my God, this is not what American presidents do. We don't embrace dictators. And you know, my view was we don't. I mean, we put in General Sisi under President Obama and John Kerry heralded him as a symbol of the renewal of Egyptian democracy. So this is the kind of tension that I think is very much present in what we're discussing.
But Sam, is this basically a reversion to the norm then? And as Glenn says, simply a more honest take on it. It's something that's been happening before. It is the normal way of human affairs to act in this way about power and resources and ideology, a fig leaf that perhaps we don't need anymore.
Well, I think the latter part of your statement is what I have a problem with. I agree with Glenn entirely. You know, Donald Trump has weaponized honesty and hypocrisy to his own ends. He's simply saying, I'm just going to, you know, sue me. I'm just going to behave like American presidents always do. And he's not even wearing a fig leaf, which is a vision that I can't get out of my head. luckily, he's got really small hands. But you know, so that's what we're seeing. And we've always seen these double standards. And I've worked most of my life in the global south, or what used to call the third world or the developing world, the Middle East. And those double standards have always been very vividly perceived and lived by people who've been victims of them. Let's also remember that amidst all of these double standards, not everything, the world has been dominated, the Western world has been dominated by the United States of America. Europe is different and has been different. It has had double standards, but they haven't been as bad very often or as actively bad as the United States. You know, yes, for example, the United Kingdom didn't suspend its very tiny amounts of military exports to Israel during Gaza. So it wouldn't have made one bit of difference even if it had. So it was a matter of principle that people, critics of Starmer, objected to, rather than a matter of practicality. And you know, we could go backwards and forwards over dozens of different examples where they did the right thing, or they did the right thing kinder, but not as much as they should have done, and so on. But the effort has been, in general, to move the world to a place in which it doesn't behave too badly, but that also the Western manages to behave in the way that it most wants, with least restrictions within the context of not behaving too badly. So, for example, there were lots of hoops and lies told in the effort to prosecute the invasion of Iraq, and downright lies and manipulation of intelligence that we've all reported on for most of our lives. And it ended in catastrophe. Donald Trump hasn't bothered with any of that when it comes to Iran. But actually, there is a really interesting, I don't know if it's a moral or a political, it's certainly a judicial conundrum. Getting rid of the Iranian regime in the broad scheme of things can't be seen to be immoral in many ways. It's definitely illegal under international law. In my view, it's not something that should be done, and it is fraught with lots of difficulties, and it is a violation of sovereignty and so on. But those are matters of principle. In a kind of more straightforward, real politic way, they are, in their argument, and it's a compelling argument with moral force behind it, they're trying to get rid of a regime that murders its own people, that's been a force of destabilization of the region, that has genocidal intent against a country not that far away, and has been problematic in terms of prosecuting and supporting terrorist operations all around the world. So nobody would mourn the demise of the Iranian regime.
But that is
the method. It is the method that's key here.
And
Hang on, let me finish this point.
Yeah, finish the point. Yeah.
It is the method, and we are always trying. The sort of right thinking people like me in the world are always trying to create a system of legal checks and balances to save us from ourselves. But the reality is that Donald Trump has done something, as Gan pointed out. His Venezuela campaign was identical to what went on in Panama, and people didn't run around with their heads on fire because it was a more popular president.
What I was going to mention is liberal interventionism.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.